The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
For me, footwork has been something that's got me out of trouble on more than one occasion on and off the pitch, so I'll go with that one.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
The Irish women's rugby team will play their last game of the calendar year this Saturday when they host Japan at the RDS in the second of their autumn internationals on the back of a 10-point victory last Friday night against the USA. It's the end of an era in many ways. Adam Griggs' last game in charge and also Ciara Griffin's last game as captain after her 40 caps and all the experience that she's brought in that back row will come to an end after a pretty shock announcement this week that she'll be retiring from international rugby at the age of just 27. The team was named earlier today by Adam Griggs ahead of the match. It's going to be a chance for three players to win their first caps on Saturday. Leinster duo Mary Healy and Ella Roberts and Connacht back Shannon Toohey are all in line to win their first caps on the bench. We've got a new look half-back pairing in the team as well with Catherine Dane at scrum half and Enya Breen is going to play at out half for the first time. Turns out that last week was Lindsay Peat's swan song. She's not involved in the match day squad this week. Stacey Flood, who played at out half last week, is away with the Sevens team in Dubai along with Baveen Parsons, Eve Higgins and Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe. So the team in full then, Lauren Delaney will play at fullback. The wings are Aoife Doyle and you've also got Laura Sheehan. The halfback pairing is Enya Breen and Catherine Dane. In midfield, once again, is Emer Considine in her fairly new position of outside centre alongside Senny Naipu. The pack then, the front row, is Laura Feely, Nevi Jones and Linda Dugong. Aoife McDermott coming back into the team in the second row. That was after a player of the game performance from Nicola Friday last week. Sam Monaghan keeps her place in the second row, and a back row then of Adele McMahon, Hannah O'Connor and Ciara Griffin captaining the side for the very last time. Delighted to say to look forward to the game at the RDS. We're joined by former Ireland captain Fiona Coughlan. Fiona, how are you getting on?
I will, all good.
Probably no great surprise that the Sevens players have been taken away for the start of the World Series coming back, but I wonder, is this going to be a recurring theme going into 2022 when the Six Nations come round and the Sevens series is likely to be back up and running, that some of these key players like Baveen Parsons, like Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe, who's become a mainstay in the team, are likely to be involved in the tug of war again?
Yeah, look, I think it was always flagged, in fairness, for this autumn internationals that there would be lots of chance for players to get time and that the Sevens girls would be missing for this weekend as they travel to Dubai next weekend. So it was flagged well in advance. But it will be interesting going forward about what happens, because obviously that Sevens squad are trying to qualify for a World Cup next September as well. So the priority, understandably now, seen as the 15s can't qualify, will go to the Sevens. So it'll be interesting to see how much actual game time they get at 15s. You know, with the Six Nations on in April, end of March, April, you know, it'll clash with one of the World Series events as well. So whether they're released or not, or whether Greg wants to pick them or he wants to go forward with a different team, is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, out half as a position as well, Fiona, which just hasn't been settled upon. And, you know, Stacey Flood played during the World Cup qualifiers and played again last week there. You know, she switched from playing scrum half at Sevens to playing back at out half with the 15s team. Again, you've got a change there with Breen playing at 10 this week. It's not that long ago that you'd Hannah Tyrrell at 10. Sydney Naipu played a little bit at 10 before that. Really, over the last 2-3 years, it's not a position that anyone has really nailed down.
I think we've tried 11 or 12 out halves in the last 4 years. So in some ways, some players haven't been given opportunity to learn their trade at 10. Some of them didn't step up when they were given an opportunity. Stacey definitely seemed to be the one from the end of the Six Nations, with Hannah retiring, going into the World Cup qualifier, that she had all the potential to play there and actually do really well there when she got used to, I suppose, managing a game of 15s and understanding how to bring her forwards into it and get her backline attack moving a little bit more. But now with her gone again, here we've Enya Breen back in. She had about 25 minutes, I think, against Spain and about 2 minutes against Italy in the qualifier. She's predominantly a centre. She hasn't played a club at out half. So again, start again. And whether she's in the Sevens squad as well, but she's not on the first team. So it'll be interesting to see whether she stays now with 15s going forward or not.
Yeah, look, it's a new era and you can understand a certain amount of experimentation there. But we are leaving Ciara Griffin's period as captain behind us. And I don't know, the news kind of caught me a little bit unawares during the week, Fiona. Apparently she'd been thinking about this since Parma and she'd spoken to her family ahead of the autumn internationals and then ultimately decided she wants to put her focus on her family going into 2022. But on the face of it, Ciara Griffin playing at a high level still had a lot of good rugby to offer to Ireland if she'd stayed around.
Listen, she's only 27 years old, so there's many years left in her. I don't know whether she had made a decision to retire if they had qualified for the World Cup and a year later qualify after or retire after that. Like, she's newly married last December. She's very much set in the farmer's lifestyle down there in Kerry, and she's a primary school teacher as well. And to be honest with you, it's a lonely road travelling up from Kerry on your own, and even travelling as far as Limerick to play her club rugby. It's a tough ask on her, like, in many ways. And then I'm sure the hurt of what went on in those qualifiers probably just confirmed it in her head, maybe that now is the time to go. I said the other night, I'm not one for sentiment and playing to a home crowd. So I wouldn't be caught up on the sentiment of this being her last game at home. But, you know, she's had a phenomenal run as captain. I never got an opportunity to play with her, but I heard about her coming up through the ranks, and then once you saw her playing, she's the type of player that just leaves everything on the pitch. She's just all action, and just a real, real hardcore player.
Is that World Cup cycle something that comes into your mind when you're considering when to exit stage left then? Because, you know, the end of your career coincides with a terrifically successful period for the team, with the 2013 Slam and with the 2014 World Cup going well. Like, when you're considering yourself, when you were considering retirement, did you, like, kind of look forward and go, well, there's a home World Cup coming around, do I try to stay around for as long as that? Or does that play into your decision making if maybe she was looking at not getting to play next year, that actually 4 years' time feels a long way away?
Well, I didn't know about the home World Cup when I retired, but yeah, it was definitely at the end of a cycle. And you know, I suppose it was myself, Lynn Cantwell, Joy Neville jumped ship a year earlier, but very much the end of a cycle. Staying on, the only reason you would consider staying on if you were anyway beneficial to help develop and breed the next players coming through, but ultimately they need game time at the highest level in order to be ready for the next World Cup. So and 4 years is a very long time. When I retired, it was only three ultimately for the 2017 World Cup, but it is a long time. And you know, then she's hitting 31, and I'm sure she's thinking family down the line as well. So she'd be questioning, what is the benefit to the squad for me staying on if I'm not going to be there in 4 years' time? Or, you know, if things don't go away, they still have to qualify for that World Cup as well. So that's a whole other mental thing going on, you know, to get your mindset into that frame that you'd go for another World Cup qualification process.
It feels on the face of it like a lot of experience lost in the back row at the one time, with Claire Malloy retiring just a few weeks ago too. Like, that's two kind of key stalwarts and players that, on the face of it, when Greg Williams comes in, he probably would have been looking at them as two of his first choice back row options.
Yeah, and it's not just on the pitch, it's off the pitch as well. It's the experience that they bring to the young players coming in, the standards that they set. You know, that's a huge part that's often forgotten about when you have players of that caliber, what they bring off the pitch. And you know, he's going to have to plan now. And there is quality coming through. You know, we saw Maeve O'Leary get her first cap last week. Hugely exciting player, whether she can keep consistently stepping up now. And I'm sure there's a few more that'll come through the ranks as Greg looks forward and plans. And that's what he's going to have to do. He's going to have to plan from a low base to see where he can bring players through in the next couple of years, looking at that next World Cup qualification process.
Just before we talk about the game itself, just with Greg coming in, and this is Adam Griggs' last game in charge before the handover for next season, you would have worked with him when he was assistant coach with the Ireland team back around the two World Cup spells in the 2010-2014 period. He's gone away and got some more experience himself in America over the last few years. Everyone has said he knows women's rugby in Ireland inside out, but what's he actually going to bring to the camp when he comes in?
Oh, look, he's got a huge enthusiasm, first and foremost, just for the game, but also for people and building that really cohesive squad. You know, he won't be just looking about what these players can give on the pitch. It'll be off the pitch, the characters within the squad, you know, the types of different personalities would be huge for Greg. He's a great people's person as well. And, you know, they're the kind of connections that he'll be looking to make and then transfer it onto the pitch. He's brilliant around the whole skills development area. So a lot of these players, you know, their skills, because they're not playing the whole way through from minis all the way up, probably aren't at the level that they should be at. So that's going to be probably a huge focus for him as well. But I definitely think it's the cohesiveness of the group that he'll be looking to forge first from the start, as opposed to what he can bring on the pitch.
They will probably be very keen as a group, the coaching team and also the players, to get a fresh renewal and a fresh start into next year too, because the last couple of weeks can't have been easy for them in camp. Like, for players to have to go in front of the media after Anthony Eddy's comments and then be asked, are you publicly backing Maloney or not? And then kind of the show of support on social media. All of this was playing out within 24 hours, 48 hours of, you know, an important enough fixture against the USA in the Autumn Internationals. Can't be easy to be in camp and have all that going on in the background at the same time.
No, it was a mess, but like, credit to them, they did galvanise and they did come together last weekend and got the performance, well, not necessarily performance, got the win. You know, the first half was really messy, but they settled a lot in the second half, and they had worked on things that didn't go well in the qualifiers. Their set piece was so much better, you know, that gave them that launch. So credit to them to be able to do that with so much going on and being able to blank out what was going on with the off the pitch stuff. But I'd say there's still remnants of that, even though there's lots of new girls in the squad that now weren't at that World Cup, so it hasn't affected them. So potentially three new caps this weekend, Maeve O'Leary last weekend, and they shouldn't be affected by what went on at that World Cup, because that's the freshness, and that's the freshness that you need going forward.
It was almost a frustration seeing the lineout work well against the USA last weekend when it misfired so often in Italy in the qualifiers.
Yeah, that's the thing about the qualifiers. Yes, the squad did not play well at all and they have to put their hands up. But my thing is, why did they not play well? Like, was it that training hadn't been going well in the lead up to it? And if that was the case, why didn't they try and fix it as a squad and go to management? Or was it the off the pitch stuff? Was the mental side of things that wasn't right? Because the players were better than what they produced in those qualifiers. So it is kind of frustrating. They had only two camps when they came back from the qualifiers, two weekends in a row to get things right. And they did get things right. So it is frustrating that it's in them and they just didn't produce it when it was needed.
Maybe just goes to show the impact of pressure though too, where, okay, there was probably a couple of weeks there where they were able to clean up some of the mistakes that happened during the qualifiers, but it's perhaps different, with no disrespect to the Autumn Internationals, when you're playing the USA at home on a Friday night as opposed to playing against Scotland where your World Cup place is on the line with 20 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, look, and that comes from playing at a high level consistently and being in those situations and learning how to manage a game. And that's what I said about some of the players coming in. They hadn't had a huge amount of international experience and under pressure. But Scotland were under pressure as well. You know, the other teams were under pressure as well to perform. And, you know, Spain wouldn't have had a huge amount of experience. Scotland aren't hugely more experienced than Ireland. They'd been missing some of their girls that had been away at GB training as well. So, it's just disappointing that they didn't perform when it was well within them, I think.
Our rugby coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in. Also, Fiona, this week it was announced that the RFU won't be fully publishing their review into what went wrong with the World Cup qualifiers, that some of the key points will be released, but not the full document. Is there a concern around that when it comes to transparency, that people are intrigued to see what went wrong and, you know, where the blame may lie and what changes have to be made? And ultimately, that document is going to stay in-house for the best part, or at least it will be decided by the RFU what information they actually put out.
Yeah, like, I suppose the only positive with this one is it is an independent person that's doing it. So Amanda Bennett is completely independent. She's an ex-international, so she's doing the review. Yes, it's annoying that they can cherry-pick what findings come out of it, but in fairness, it's very difficult to publish a full review with names in it. And so it's the balance between how much you can actually publish without, you know, I suppose, indicting someone's character or someone's job if it was their job. So I think there's a very fine line about it, and that has to be brought into consideration. But I don't like that they can just cherry pick. I would love if it's Amanda Bennett who decides what the findings come out and what should come from it, as opposed to an RFU. And maybe that is the case. I don't know. I don't know her terms of reference, whether she's just doing the review or where the conclusions lie in that. So that's going to be interesting to see.
And probably what's more important is what's enacted upon from the report itself.
We had one in 2017, Will, and to be honest, it doesn't seem that much happened. And I don't know what came really of that review. And we have the Women's Action Plan, but not a lot of that has been implemented. And I know COVID can be the excuse for some of it, but some of it, I think, could have been implemented more strongly, or there could have been more emphasis put on it.
On the pitch itself, what are we to expect from Japan on Saturday?
Yeah, so Japan have obviously played two games now. They played Scotland and Wales. They've got beaten badly in both of them. Against Scotland, they were down to 14 for 16 minutes. They're able to play. You know, they play a fast tempo similar to their men. They get caught out in the physicality stakes sometimes. which they can struggle with. They don't play a huge amount of club rugby. They hadn't played in 2 years. Their last game was November 2019 as well. Their coach is new enough in. She came in March 2019 and again didn't have a whole amount of time with them. She's an ex-Canadian international. So they'll look to play, but I think Ireland should be stronger in the set piece, should be able to manage the game better, but it'll be all action from Japan. They'll look to move the ball. They'll look to run it at every opportunity. They have a couple of players playing in the English Premiership. I think they've got 3 or 4 players playing in the Premiership. So they would be playing at a higher standard week in, week out. And again, some of the Irish players, actually a couple of them play in Exeter with Laura Sheehan. They've lost Sato, their second row. She got red carded last week, so she's out. So she's a big loss for them. But yeah, look, they can play. But I think Ireland, even with their 3 uncapped players on the bench, are more experienced side and should be playing at a higher level week in, week out.
That's one of the challenges when it comes to these series too, is that when you've got a shallow pool of teams that are available, and I was kind of thinking about this going into the World Cup qualifiers too, it's very difficult to actually play test international games that are effectively friendlies, because so many of the teams that you're going to play against are those who you're likely to come up against in the Six Nations or who you're likely to play in, you know, World Cup qualifiers as well. It is very difficult to actually line up a decent fixture list when you're having to rely on, say, a team like Japan, who don't have a huge amount of rugby played over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, look, I think that's across the board. I think if you look at England and France now, they're looking, obviously, going towards the World Cup. They were looking for big challenges. They brought New Zealand over, and New Zealand have seemed to have gone backwards in the last couple of years. You know, really poor performances by New Zealand. Their pack not delivering at all. So I don't think England or France got out of this autumn internationals what they were looking for, as they look to go and win a World Cup next year. And similarly, you know, obviously Scotland are going to a World Cup final or qualifier in December. They would have been looking for a higher level of competition as well. So it isn't just Ireland. I think the USA game, in fairness, USA ranked higher above Ireland, probably just hadn't played a huge amount of international rugby. They had 2 matches against Canada before they came over. So, but on paper, you would deem that USA would be stronger than Ireland because of their ranking and the number of times that they've beaten us. But yeah, it's difficult. And I think that's a global issue where the women's game is at now. And I think going forward, as the world competition kicks off next season or 2023, WXV, that'll be really interesting because you'd be hoping to get higher quality games year in, year out. With the tiered system and relegation and promotion would be really interesting. So hopefully going forward, that will offer much better competition for teams.
Well, one of the men's teams who've been making strides in Argentina come to Dublin 24 hours later, and the Pumas in 2020 took out the All Blacks. They got a draw against Argentina, were competitive during the Rugby Championship season this year as well, won against Italy last week. I think a lot of Irish supporters, Fiona, are probably on a high after the 9-point win against New Zealand last week. We'll get the team tomorrow to play the Pumas on Sunday, but they're going to probably provide a challenge for Andy Farrell's side on Sunday, given the way that Argentina have been playing.
Yeah, look, I think they are obviously really disappointed that they didn't get any results out of the championship. Then they come over, play France. They only lose 29-20 against a strong French team, and then they get a good win last week. They're always in a difficult situation, I suppose, with so many of their players playing away from Argentina, so many of them in Europe. They don't get a huge amount of time together. Their Jaguars team aren't in Super Championship anymore. They've been on the road a long time, but they have some seriously quality players, and they'll never shirk away from the physicality. You're looking at the likes of Montoya, Matera. I know Petty's out, he's injured now. Cubelli's back at scrum half. So they do have a quality team. I just think the level that Ireland were at last week was just phenomenal. Like, I was blown away with them, and I was blown away with the fact that they kept doing it for 80 minutes. But even at that, with 17 minutes to go, New Zealand were still within touching distance of the game, which they shouldn't have been. We were dominant in every facet of the game. But I always thought New Zealand could potentially come back and score, and they had a try disallowed. So what's going to be hugely interesting is that selection tomorrow, about what way Andy Farrell is looking at it. Is he looking at it to try and get game time into players that he hasn't seen a huge amount of, or is he adamant on getting that win? Because yeah, the win and that momentum is important, but I think it's a really important game to get game time into some of the younger players.
Yeah, remarkable that New Zealand make 200 plus tackles during the game, and they're a forward pass away from potentially being level going into the closing stage of the match. It just goes to show how even when New Zealand are playing below par, they're just so dangerous in a game. With the changes, we know the halfbacks have to change because Jameson Gibson-Park and Johnny Sexton are out. Is this a game to put Joey Carberry in from the start and use one of the young out halves afterwards?
Yeah, like I think Joey needs more time as well. You know, he came on, he kicked superbly, but I think he needs to have a game from the start to manage it, to play the way that Ireland are now playing, which is really that multifaceted attack that they have, which was just an absolute joy to watch, and the tempo of the game as well. It'll be interesting, though, who he pairs him with. Does he go for Craig Casey for that tempo, or does he bring experience in with Conor Murray to try and settle it? So, like, I'd love to see Casey in, but is that too much change with and too little experience, I suppose, at 9-10? Will be very interesting to see. And then, likewise, you know, back three, like Hugo Keenan started the last 15 games and has been absolutely outstanding, but we do need to find out who is next in line to him.
Well, Simon Zeebo could well come back in. You know, he's had his 4 years in exile back in the squad. We'll see if he's picked in the match day 23 tomorrow, but potentially that's a position Zeebo could play. Zeebo could play on the wing.
100%, like anywhere in the back three, Zeebo can play, and it's just what Farrell is looking to get out of his players there. And likewise, the back row, I just think that's going to be hugely interesting. Like last week's back row were phenomenal. But does Jack Conan get a rest now after being on the Lions, coming back playing so well? Maybe Coombs, who obviously has been out with some sort of viral illness for the last couple of weeks, does he get a chance in there? He's been impressive at every opportunity he's been given. So will he get in there now as well? So, yeah, I think we'll see some changes, but I don't think it'll be wholesale. I don't think he'll, from the start, I don't think he'll go wholesale.
I would think, Fiona, he'll want to reward some form, though, if Coombs is to come in, with the way Coombs has played in this calendar year, not just the season so far. And Balakun, how well he's played for Ulster, I'm sure he'll try and get him on for some match time during this game against Argentina too, because it is a bit of a balancing act for Andy Farrell in a way, because the Six Nations come round right in the back of this. I was chatting to James Ryan a couple of weeks ago, and he was keen to point out they've got five blocks of games and then they're playing in the World Cup. So at this stage, there's not really that much time for experimentation. This is one of these few games where if players are going to get a chance, the time is actually available in front of them.
Yeah, and like we need the depth in the squad, so he needs to see what people can step up to and the level. And Argentina is a good test for that, because it will be a hugely physical encounter and they can play ball as well. So, but I think they want to keep the momentum that they have as well. So yes, there'll certainly be changes, but I don't think it'll be wholesale across the park. And as you said, they've very much stated that they're in the next World Cup cycle and are looking forward to it. And Sexton and Farrell have both stated that. So that's definitely in the back of their mind. But if you think back the last couple of World Cups, we just haven't had that depth in the squad, and that's what we need to get. So do you take a risk in the Six Nations where you keep blooding new players? And I know the Six Nations is important because it's a financial windfall. The higher up that you rank is so important as well for the IRFU and funding. So that's pressure on them as well. So it's just getting that balance between where do you want to see yourself at the next World Cup and not, I suppose, dropping your standards now in order to get that depth.
Two really intriguing games of the weekend then. The Irish women's team playing against Japan on Saturday, Argentina against Ireland on Sunday. If you'd like to win tickets to go along to the Aviva to watch Ireland against Argentina, all you have to do is answer the following question. Who is set to captain Ireland on Sunday? Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cent. We'll call you back after the show. Don't worry if you miss out. Tickets are still available for the game. Visit irishrugby.ie for more details.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.